yellow, orange, red, burgundy. The colors are creeping south. This hour, we'll talk about fall color. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here. We'll talk about the conditions that lead to a vibrant fall and what our chances are this year. We'll also talk about when we can expect to see peak colors and how to track the peak as you plan your excursions. We also want to know what kind of color you're seeing where you are and your favorite places to enjoy the foliage. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Mark will answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Good morning. It's Horticulture Day today. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be along in just a few minutes to answer your questions. But we're going to start our conversation by talking about fall color. And DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here with us today. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And of course, the color outside across much of the state right now is dark gray. But we are starting to see some color creeping down from the north on the trees. What is the condition right now? How far are we away from peak, do you think?
Well, you know, we come up with that question every year, you know, and to me, there's actually potentially a couple peaks. It seems like it happens every year. It depends which peak you're talking about. If you're talking about the peak of the sugar maples, the white ash, the green ash, if you listen to the folks up in northeast Iowa, they're saying we're probably 8 to 9 days away, 6 to 7, somewhere around October 10th, they're kind of predicting up there. But the funny thing is, a lot of times we'll have that peak, and then maybe even a week or 2 weeks later, you'll start to see real vibrant some of the hickories or the red oaks or the white oaks. So sometimes we have these different, you know, after those kind of disappear, there's maybe even another show. It seems like they don't all seem to come together at once, though, which is kind of neat because you can drag it over 2-3 weeks maybe, and it all depends on the weather. We talk about this every year, but we've had drought, and we keep – last year we're saying, well, gee, colors aren't going to be very good. They're going to be blah, 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 blah. But actually they were pretty good, and we've kind of had drought again this year. You know – one of the key things you need is clear days, which we don't have today, but we've had the last couple weeks, and you need cool nights, which we've had the last couple weeks. So things have kind of been building up for potential for some of those good colors to be produced, especially when you get into some of the reds, the more vibrant colors. Those aren't produced till now, so they're very weather-dependent. The yellows, some of the oranges, they're already there. They're there all year, just hunched under the green chlorophyll, waiting to explode and go, here we are. They're there. But the purples and the vibrant reds and stuff really depend on the weather. So even this next 2 weeks, it looks like looking at next week, it's supposed to be pretty clear. The nights are going to be cool. You know, we could be setting up for some pretty good shows. But again, it could be real spotty here and right there, where you get a good show for a couple of days, and then if you get some freezing temperatures or rainy weather like this weekend, that can start to shake things down a little bit.
So what is it about clear days and cool nights that brings us those vibrant colors?
Well, the vibrant colors, a couple things. You know, the chlorophyll is where we get the green color. As the chlorophyll breaks down, we start to see other pigments like the carotenes, and that's where the yellows and some of the oranges come from. Those are already in the leaf. But then there's some pigments called anthocyanins, and don't ask me to spell that because I won't today very well. They're not produced until later, and they're dependent on production of sugars in the leaf. And good sugar production is produced when you have those clear days. So if you have those good sunny days, you get that good sugar production. And if you have good sugar production, you often get good anthocyanin production. Well, if you have the cool nights, that actually kind of traps the sugars in the leaf, and they don't get funneled back in to the plant for storage yet. And if they do that, then you get that good production. If you don't have that cool nights, the cool nights, it gets flushed back in, and then you don't really get the good productions of those anthocyanins. So if you get those cool nights, it kind of keeps that color and that production in the leaf, and that's really what it does. It kind of locks it in there. So that's the really key part. And actually, the last couple of years, we've had that formula to have some decent color for us to see.
What we are already seeing some of the yellows. What trees are already changing?
Great. So the first one that kind of shows up are the green ash. They kind of show their yellows. Cottonwood's another one. Black walnut's another. Now, the funny thing, green ash, they can get a real vibrant yellow. And some of those, I was on my bike ride this morning to work, and there was a couple ash in Iowa City that really, with the gloominess, were really saying, hey, I'm here. And so that's kind of neat. But again, with the kind of the fall and the dryness we have had, last year or this year, ash produced a lot of seed. And so a lot of these ashes have brown in them too, because there's a lot of seed on these trees. So between the yellow, you see this kind of awful, ucky brown. So it kind of, and some of those trees don't have as many leaves because of the stress of the fall. So some are looking really good and some are looking kind of blah. And then the walnuts will turn kind of a yellow. You also will start to get the aspen, especially as you get up in the northeast Iowa up in there, and then the cottonwoods. I am starting to see some of the red maples starting to show a little bit of red. In the forest, I'm seeing the vine, the Virginia creeper, poison ivy starting to show, and then along the roadsides, the sumacs are showing their purple and their red color. And then the sugar maples are starting to show some yellow and some colors. And according to the folks up in northeast Iowa, the maples, the sugar maples, are really starting to show that. One other that I do see right now, too, is the white ash. It'll have a purple fall color, and it's starting to kind of show it. But within that, you have a big mix of green. And sometimes I think that's even kind of neat. You have this green, and then you'll have these pockets of yellow and maybe a few oranges and a few yellows. So there's a lot of opportunity for some really neat situations over the next 3 weeks.
Every step along the way. Yeah. What are some of your favorite ways to enjoy fall color?
I love to ride a bike this time of year. There's actually along what they call the Cedar Valley near West Branch. There's a bike ride that you can do along across the Cedar River that's beautiful. I also like to be up near Lake McBride State Park, Palisade-Kempler State Park. There's some beautiful areas. I drive all the time in my job, so I don't like to drive a long way. If I could, I would go up in the northeast Iowa and really enjoy those areas. But I drive so much during my job, sometimes in my days off, I don't like to go very far. So I'm fortunate enough that in central Iowa, in eastern Iowa, there's some beautiful areas. And even some of the towns, I think of Mount Vernon and some of the other, even Lisbon, Iowa, have some maples and other in Iowa City, Cedar Rapids. There's some just beautiful natural areas. Pennington Ridge County Park near Central City. We're very fortunate in this part of the state to have some really unique areas. And I know in every part of the state, people have their own unique areas that they can go and find close, but there's great opportunities to take River Road from Davenport clear up into northeast Iowa to really see things along the river. The thing I always tell folks, though, is call ahead. If you know somebody, you know, we sit here and say, well, things may start to really kind of bounce on October 10th. Well, they really could look really nice on October 8th. So if you know somebody, if you have time, this time of year, it's really better if you're willing or able to, and not all of us can do it, but leaving a day's notice, because sometimes if you really want to capture that neatness, you may only have a couple days. But if the weather kind of stays kind of dry, kind of cool, kind of clear, you know, we could be talking about this over a week and a half or even longer. Could stretch it out for quite a while.
And, of course, the Department of Natural Resources does do a color report. We've put up a link on our Facebook page to that. But how often is that updated?
It's every Monday morning. So they kind of see what happened over the weekend, and then they kind of give you a forecast for the following week. So This past Monday, they were kind of forecasting that October 10th, at least up in northeast Iowa, and they do it by regions. We have folks in southeast Iowa, northwest Iowa, southeast or southwest, and then even in the central part that we have foresters, area foresters, district foresters that call in to our folks in Des Moines and Ames. And then they have actually a tape that you can call in and listen to, or I sent you the link. We actually have a site that you can see the written print of what those reports are every Monday.
All right, and that number as well, if you're looking for it, you can find it on that website. But you can also call 515-233-4110. That's how you find out about fall conditions, 515-233-4110. And as a forester, Mark, you've talked about some of the different varieties of trees that you like to watch and see which ones change when. Does the vibrancy of the color of a tree tell you anything about the health of the tree?
Not really, because, well, it does in the sense that if there's good fall color, that means we had good green leaves going into the fall. If we don't have that, then there could be some stress. Or just the density of the crown in the fall. If a crown of a tree is really thin and kind of sparse this time of year, I'm really concerned that the drought and some of those things were really wearing on it. And I have seen some of that on some trees. Or the big trigger to me is if the fall color shows up 4 weeks too early, then that tree's stressed. It's saying, hey, even though the weather conditions will allow me to go later, something is causing me to shut down. I'm stressed. I'm showing my fall color now.
And we have seen that this summer and the summer before.
In the last two summers, yeah. We have. So, and a lot of times you see that trees in parking lots and places are tough environments. That, to me, is a scary indication because it means that those trees are – something's going on with those trees. So they're shutting down early to try to save their lives for the next year. And that's what really concerns me more than if it's vibrant or not. If it's not vibrant, though, again, that's more weather-related. But if the crown is thin or if it's too early, that is a sign that there could be something going on with those trees.
And with our very dry summer last summer and then the – last half of the summer this year being extremely dry, are you concerned about what we're going to see in the springtime as far as tree survival?
Well, we talked about this last year. The challenges with these extremes like drought or the 2008 floods and those kind of things, trees can live off reserves for a year or two, but then once those reserves are gone and if they're still stressed, they can have problems. I was saying last year, we may have to wait 3 or 4 years before we really see the impact of this drought. And I said last year, well, if it's dry the next year, we could have even more problems. So for the next couple years, we could have serious issues related to the drought conditions. Yes.
I'm talking with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Coming up in just a moment, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join the conversation. And you can, too. Give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100. And tell us what kind of color you're seeing on the trees in your area. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Also joining us is Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming by today. And you can join our conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. When you give us a call, we'd also love to know what kind of color you're seeing in your area right now. Patrick is on the line first from Oxford. Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
Hi there. What's your question?
Well, I've got an oak tree in my yard that has a poison ivy growing all the way up to the top of it, and all this wind we've had recently, I've got my whole yard is covered with red poison ivy leaves. I want to know if I should be concerned about my grandson picking them up or me trying to rake them or anything.
Well, I think as long as you rake them and keep them away, then you're fine. Don't throw them in any kind of burn pile or anything like that. But, yeah, if they're picked up, you can. Their sensitivity is different, so there's still sensitivity in that leaf. You still can get the toxin on you.
Okay.
So you got to be careful. When you're raking, I mean, obviously use gloves. Don't
wear
rub your skin
after.
Yep, stuff like that. But again, it's really critical not to get that in any type of burn barrel or anything like that, because that material can get in your lungs and you can have some really serious issues.
Once it turns brown, is it still poison?
You know, it really varies. There's still toxin in those plants, and even on the vines themselves in the winter. I've talked to people that have backed up to a vine in the wintertime where they had their sweatshirt or coat, and they rubbed up against the vine and got some poison ivy. So, again, there's always some potential in those plants to, if you're sensitive, to pick something up.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Patrick. And next, let's go to Patty in Des Moines at 866-780-9100. Hi, Patty.
This is a garden question.
All right.
I hope they're right. It's a community garden, and the guy that gardens next to me wins ribbons at the fair, so I want to listen to him. And he tills manure into his garden every year, and I'm wondering if I should do that. And then I've heard about a cover crop. Should I put a cover crop on my garden, or one or both, or one or the other?
Well, you can use manure, barnyard manure, things like horse manure, cow manure. If you're going to do that, I would suggest doing it this fall and then working it into the soil, tilling it in, because your manures can contain things like E. coli and other bacteria. So you want to work that into the soil, and in that environment, those things typically die. So that would be one option. Till it in this fall if you can.
And the cover crops?
Well, I don't think you have to do both of those. You can if you want. The alternative would be a cover crop like annual rye or cereal rye. You want to do that soon, though. The seeds should germinate as long as the soil temperature is above 40 degrees, so you do have time on that. It would have been great if you had done this before the rain, because once you do it, it needs to rain for that seed to germinate. So either one is fine. I don't think you have to do both.
What about scale? I have scale on my house plants. Is it blowing through the air? It's everywhere.
Well, no, it doesn't blow through the air, but scale is an insect. It has a hard covering or shell over its body. And for that reason, it's very, very hard to control, because your typical contact insecticides do not work. One way of doing it, which is rather tedious, is simply to scrape them off with your thumbnail. Okay, you can do that if you have small numbers. The other thing would be to apply insecticidal soap on a weekly basis for maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks, because the scale, they do produce offspring, and the offspring, when they first appear, do not have this protective covering. So if you spray them with soapy water, insecticidal soap, that will kill them. But you're never quite sure when they're there, so you have to do it on a weekly basis for like 2 months.
What kind of insecticidal soap? Just go to somewhere and get and spray it?
Right, a garden center. Right. And if you have a plant that is heavily infested, I would definitely isolate that from other plants in the house, because they can't fly, but if they touch, they can basically walk the young ones from one plant to the other. So basically quarantine any plant that's got it bad. And you may also consider maybe tossing it, just because, well, if it's badly infested, the reality is you're not going to be able to control the insect. It's very difficult to control if it's heavily infested.
50% of the plant or 10%?
Well, if it were just 10%, maybe you could cut off one or two stems on the plant and discard that portion. But if it's the entire plant, I'd probably discard the whole plant.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Patty. And here's a tree question for you, Mark. This is from email, and it's from Jackie in Iowa City. Two tree trimming questions. One, we have an oak that seems to be about 5 years old. We've only lived in our house for 2 years. It has some low branches. How do we know what to cut to facilitate growth, and what time of year should we do that?
All right. So with young trees, the thing to think about is the first thing that the longer you can keep one straight leader, that's the best. So if you look up into the tree and you see a fork and 2 leaders, you want to cut that out first. The lower branches, the longer you can leave those, the better. The thing you have to remember is if you have a branch at 5 feet, that branch will always be at 5 feet. So if one of your goals is to get clearance to 8 to 9 feet, those lower branches are temporary branches. So the general rule we tend to say is let those lower branches grow until they get at least an inch in diameter and get them off before they're 2 inches in diameter, because you want to minimize the size of wound that you create. That doesn't mean that if you have a bigger tree that you can't cut a 3 or 4 inch branch, but when you're developing that tree, you want to leave those lower limbs on for a while. If we take more than 10 to 25% of, at any one time, we can prune too much. So you want to stay kind of below. So you want to only prune probably 10% or 15% off at a time. As far as the oaks, we don't want to prune them in the summer. So we're starting to get in the fall. I would say once we get a good frost here, hopefully in the next couple weeks, and the leaves kind of go away, I would say early November would be a good time to prune those oaks. I mean, you could prune oaks right now, but I tend to say, you know, there's two times of the year that I don't like to prune. That's in the spring when we're going to basically new foliage coming out, bud swell, flowers, and then the fall under leaf color change. You tend to want to wait until the fall color goes away, the leaves drop, and they really go dormant. Then you can go. So you're probably looking at sometime in November or so.
Well, and with oaks, you don't trim them in the summer either, right?
Right. You don't want to prune the oaks in the summer at all. So basically from March until probably mid to late October or into early November, don't prune oaks at all. Wait. If you have to prune oaks during that time, if they get broken branches or something, prune it correctly and then treat it with a latex paint to cover that up.
All right, and another tree question from Jackie. We have a pine on our property that's next to the oak. We prefer the oak. Should we cut the pine down to encourage a stronger, taller oak, or can these two be side by side? The trunks are probably 7 to 10 feet apart. A neighbor's yard recently hacked into the pine and lopped off the ground branches and middle branches, thinking they were dead, although they were just doing the fall needle drop. Will this impact the pine's growth?
Well, anytime you take green foliage off, if you take too much, that could impact the growth of that tree. I mean, if it was a small percentage of the full crown of that pine tree, it'll probably be okay. Again, if it was less than 10 to 20% of all the live material, that tree will probably survive. As far as the thing to think about, if it's like a red oak or a white oak, those trees can get 60, 70 feet tall, probably have a 25 to 40 foot spread. So if you don't remove the pine, that tree is going to be kind of empty on that one side. If you can deal with it aesthetically, that tree can probably survive. But if you really want that tree to flourish and stuff and really expand, you might want to think about taking that pine down to really give it more room to survive and grow.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Diana is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Diana.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My husband and I, a few years ago, moved into a house in West Des Moines near the Valley Junction area. It's an old brick house that I think was built in the 40s. I'm not quite sure of the date. But it was left, the exterior was left untended for, I think, well over a decade. And there's tons and tons of what I think is ivy covering the house. And we've had to, you know, pull a lot of it off. But I really think it's really pretty, and I don't want to get rid of all of it. I was wondering if I can easily manipulate it to just go into places where I want it to go, or if that's going to be too daunting of a task, if ivy or whatever it is just will go wherever. Does anyone have a suggestion on that?
Well, what you may be seeing possibly might be Virginia creeper or woodbine. It has a palmately compound leaf, typically 5 to 7 leaflets per leaf. Mm-hmm. It typically climbs things because it has these tendrils that have like adhesive tabs on the ends.
Uh-huh.
And so it sticks to things and it climbs, okay? So if you have that, the best way to control it is by pruning it fairly severely if you need to.
Okay.
It really shouldn't probably climb on most surfaces like wood surfaces, mm-hmm. because it clings, it's very hard to get off. It keeps the wood too moist. So typically it's not a very good cover for wood or other siding. It's more appropriate maybe for brick or stone.
Okay.
And so if you have that, I would try to limit that to maybe stone or brick rather than siding or wood.
Oh, because the house is, the exterior is primarily brick. But I do wonder about, we had to replace our gutters because one of the vines had just ripped, you know, a lot of that off because it had just grown underneath it. But like, near the gutters where there's a little bit of wood, would that be a problem if I allowed it to grow just up and over it, as long as I monitored it and made sure it was only a small area that it was growing over? Or should I just not let it go past any brick surfaces?
I probably wouldn't let it go beyond any brick or stone surfaces, like around windows and things like that, if you have wood around there, because they cling. They're very hard to get off. They keep the surface too wet, and that does lead typically to rotting problems. So I would be inclined to prune it, keep it off those areas if you can. The plant is native to Iowa. It's very vigorous. It does withstand pruning very easily, so you're not going to hurt it that much by pruning it severely.
All right. Diana, thank you so much for your call. You can join our conversation. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next, we'll go to Randy in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question today?
I've been selling different kinds of pears at the John C. Swan parking ramp in Iowa City. Got a little PR for those people. I've got a one's called a Lincoln and the other one's a Parker, and they're real thin-skinned and they're very sweet. Now, this other variety I haven't figured out. They're kind of a long-necked pear. They have a nice reddish blush on the side, and they are a thick-skinned pear.
Hmm. And you wish to have it identified? Is that
right?
Your, okay. Boy, based on the description, I'm not sure. If you have a digital camera and can take some photographs of the fruit showing that color and shape, send that to my email address, which is Hortline, Hortline, at iastate.edu. And I'll have a look at that and see if I can determine what that is. It's kind of hard on the phone, but
right.
if we see the shape and the color, that should be quite helpful.
And Randy, if you can't take a picture of it, if you're in Iowa City during the week, Patrick O'Malley is the area extension horticulturist, and he's at the Johnson County Extension Office in Iowa City. And if you just drop in there between 8 and 5 during the week, you can drop a sample off and leave it for him, and he could identify it for you too.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Liz in Cedar Falls. Hi, Liz.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, about a year ago, we purchased an upright Hicks Yew shrub, planted it in the front of the house, made it through the winter, did well all summer, but in the last month or so, it's looking a little yellow. And I'm just wondering if I should be concerned or if there's something I could do to perk it back up.
Is that just a few needles, or is it the majority of the needles?
It's the majority.
Majority. That's not a good sign. well, what I would be doing is, if you're not getting the rain or the rain this weekend, go ahead and water early next week. And I would do that on a regular basis, maybe every 10 days or so, until the ground freezes this winter. And,
okay.
But I would not fertilize at this point, but make sure it has plenty of moisture if the weather doesn't cooperate.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
We don't see too many disease problems or insect problems on there, on the yew. So my guess is it's just having a hard time getting established, and the weather the last 2 years haven't been the best.
All right, Liz, thanks for your call. Next up, John in Grinnell. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have a very large tree very close to my house. It's about 4 feet around, and I'm sorry to say I do not know what it is. It's not one of the hardwoods. The leaf is oval-shaped with a point on the end. The question is, for about 10 years that I've lived in the house, the tree weeps from about three locations. Not excessively, so I've never really given it much thought. But for the last 2 years, this weeping has been quite extensive, and it's not sap. It's very much like water. It actually drips off one of the limbs. And so I'm concerned if I need to think about removing this tree, if it's unhealthy and I have a chance of having it come crashing into the house. So I'd love to hear what your opinion is.
Well, let me ask you this, John. When it weeps or in any of these locations, is there any kind of stain on the wood or the trunk?
Well, by stain, you know, if you poured a bucket of water down the side of the trunk, it would make a big, wide, wet spot, and that's what it has. The wet spot is 18 inches wide all the way down the trunk.
Most likely, if it's kind of oval, it kind of sounds like it could be maybe an elm or something like that, and you're probably looking at a condition called wet wood or slime flux.
Okay.
And it's actually a bacterial disease that's usually in trees, and it usually comes from wounds, old branches, old wound cuts, or any kind of damage. You can see it on cottonwood, mulberry, even on oaks sometimes. That doesn't necessarily mean that the tree is unhealthy, but if there's decay or anything like that in it, it may be an indication that you should at least have the tree evaluated. Just because you have wet wood doesn't always mean you have decay and those kind of problems, but it means that there's obviously some wounds in there. And a lot of times in those areas, you'll see flies or sometimes even different bee species and stuff. They'll be attracted at different times. But sometimes when that wetness dries, you'll see kind of a whitish or a brownish color on the bark, too. And that's just an indication of that condition.
And we have to take a break. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about this
when we get back.
This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran. And next on the line is Bennett from Norwalk. Hi, Bennett.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hi, love your show. I've got two questions. One is, we've got 5 acres south of Norwalk, and we have a bunch of walnut trees, 3 or 4, and, you know, they make all of those walnuts in the big green shells, and they drop all over and make my lawnmower blade dull. But I know that walnuts are good. Can we eat those walnut meats, and do you have any idea about how to get them out because they're so hard? And then the second question is, we'd like to put in some fruit trees, apples or pears, and I keep hearing that if you put in very many apples, they attract so many pests, you almost have to spray them. So I wonder if there's varieties or ways of planting to try to either avoid spraying or spray minimally.
I'll take the walnut question, Richard, and let you finish up with the fruit trees.
All right.
Bennett, actually, with the black walnuts, that meat is edible, and you're going to see a lot of variation in the quality of the meat that's available. There's a lot of genetic difference out there. So depending on your tree, sometimes they'll feel really good and there'll be good material there. And also depending on the size, there's a number, if you go online in different places, there's a number of people that have different little nutcrackers that they homemade nutcrackers that they've made. Some people use hammers, some people use all kinds of different vice grips and different things. But if you crack those, they are edible, and they can be very good. I know a lot of people that crack them, use them for cooking, use them for winter harvesting as they like to eat nuts and stuff. But you're going to see a lot of variation.
And what's the best way to get the husk off? Do you know?
The best way to get the husk off a lot of times is kind of let them heat up in a pile and then just start kind of scraping them off. They
get real mushy.
You also have to be used to some different things. There's actually a maggot that gets in the husk, but it doesn't get into the nut itself. So don't worry about that as being an issue. But wear gloves, rubber gloves, different things like that, because it doesn't. The husk doesn't smell as good. It gets kind of stainy and stuff like that. But a lot of people will kind of lay them out on the drive or in the back on a screen and then kind of mush them out that way and kind of clean that material off. But they can't – you're going to see a lot of variability, though, in the quality of the nuts.
All right. And Richard, onto the fruit trees.
As far as the fruit trees, unfortunately with apples, they have a number of threats insect-wise. Things like apple maggot, cuddling moth, plum curculio, And for that reason, if you don't spray on a regular basis, oftentimes the damage tends to be fairly severe. And to prevent that, you typically have to spray on a regular basis. Some years, if you don't, the damage may be fairly light. Other years may be quite extensive. And there's really no way to get around that, or a very good way to get around that. But there are some other fruit trees that have fewer pests that you don't have to spray as much typically. And so I would consider things like the sour cherry or tart cherry, the pie cherry, pears, possibly plums, because they tend to have fewer pest problems. So, but apples tend to be high maintenance, unfortunately.
All right, Bennett, thanks a lot for your call. Next, John on the line. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I've got a place in the country that on the north side of the house has ferns. We'd like to remove the ferns and put in shrubs. We've got windows, and we're thinking more of an evergreen shrub, and I just wanted some ideas.
Okay. Well, as far as evergreen shrubs, you don't really have many options. Yews do a very good job. You can grow those in sun or shade. They're very well adapted to Iowa, so yews would be my suggestion.
All right. And let's get through some email questions here. We have a lot of them today. Let's answer a question from Jim. He says he has Prime Jim and Prime Jan mm-hmm. blackberries, but no fruit this year, and he's wondering why.
Well, it could be the late season. Those two varieties typically bear fruit on the new growth in late summer, early fall. But this year we had such a late spring. You know, we had snow in early May, so it's possible they're so far behind, they're just not forming fruit like they should. So hopefully next year they will with a so-called normal year. But typically what they want to do on those is to cut them back to the ground early next spring in April.
All right. And Jim also reports no fall tree color yet along the North Raccoon River near Adel. But Brock in Cedar Rapids says the sumac are at their peak, but the storms today probably will end that show. And his question is, he says, we have three small trees, one maple, two bur oak, that have outgrown the tree wrap they came in. I thought about making new ones out of black perforated corrugated drainage pipe. What do you think?
Well, first of all, tree wrap should only be on the tree basically in the wintertime. There's a number of reasons why we might put it on to actually avoid buck rubbing and stuff like that. But I would stay away from the black tile material. First of all, that stuff is really stiff, and it's hard to get on and hard to get off. And also, the black material tends to heat up. So they could use paper wrap as one possibility, or we're starting to see some of that material that actually is white. So if you can get some white tubing or white piping, that'll work, tile-like material. But you want to get something that's a little looser and around that tree so basically it's not tight against it. Really, if you're looking at the two things we're really looking at is sun scald, especially on maples, probably not as much an issue on the bur oaks. So with the bur oaks, if he's more concerned about a buck rubbing, then I would put something on that at this time of year. But if he doesn't have bucks on the bur oaks, they don't tend to have as big an issue with sun scald. I probably wouldn't wrap those. I would probably still wrap the maples for the sun scald issue, but you can use the paper wrap or, again, some white type of material.
All right. Here's another question from Kathy in Iowa City. Is it okay to prune and trim rose bushes now? If so, how do I know where I should prune them?
I would typically wait and do that in early spring, typically early April. And if you have a modern rose like a hybrid tea, what I would typically do is just go out there and see how much dead wood the plants contain and then prune out the dead wood. If you have very little dead wood, say we have a mild winter and the plants are maybe 3 foot tall, I would probably cut those back to maybe a foot, foot and a half, and leave it at that.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Keith is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Keith.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
A suggestion for the walnut guy, an old hand corn sheller was excellent for taking husks off walnuts.
There you go.
I have a large old oak tree that this last storm took down one of the branches, and it was about 18 inches in diameter. And it's dying, but 10 days ago, yellow growth appeared on the bark. There must be 14 or 15 huge pumpkin-colored. I haven't touched them or anything. It's raining right now. I'd go out, and they're, I'd say, from side to side, they're 12 to 14 inches and smaller, and the depth of them, top to bottom, would be 3 to 4 inches. And like I say, there must be 14 of them. And I don't know what they are, and they appeared suddenly and they're growing rapidly, and I don't know if they affect squirrels or what happens to them or where they came from.
Keith, this sounds like maybe some fungal growth growing out of the bark. Is that what you're kind of describing?
That's what I would guess, yes.
Yeah. If this tree has been dying for a while, there's a lot of secondary organisms, fungi, that will start to invade those areas, especially dead branches, dead bark. If you really want to know if it's something of concern, I mean, anytime there's mushroom growth coming out of the tree, I'm concerned that there may be internal decay. So that's the one sign. I'm not sure which species it may be, just based on timing and stuff. We've had a little moisture, too. That may have caused things to pop. There's a lot of secondary fungi that will grow on dead bark, though. But if you want to take some pictures and get those to your local extension office, they may be able to pass those up to someone at Iowa State in a disease clinic that could look at that to make sure to see if that's indicating internal decay. Some of these are just surface decay, though, too. If that bark is dead, they're just feeding on that surface of the bark, and they're not actually indicating decay in the tree. But if it's something that's indicating decay in the tree, I would want to know that so you could have it looked at closer to make sure that that tree is stable and not going to be an issue in a windstorm or anything else later on.
Right. If it's not going to hit your house, it might be vibrant and fun to
right.
look at. But
right. I mean, if it's out in the yard away from everything, it's not a concern. But if it's close to a structure, I would want it analyzed, like an arborist, certified arborist, to take a closer look at that tree to see if you have internal decay or problems there.
All right, Keith, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Karen in Carlisle. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a couple of questions. Well, one question about two sycamore trees that we have. This year, the upper half of both trees has small leaves, with the very top of the trees not having any leaves at all. And, of course, we're familiar with anthracnose, which happens in the spring. We understand that when it's really wet. And neighboring trees of the same type were the same as ours, but now they have leafed out. Ours never have. We also have a lot of suckers on the trunks. And we were wondering, do you think there's any hope for that coming back ever next year, or do you think the tree might be dying?
It sounds to me, Karen, that you might start to be seeing some decline. Anytime you start to get thinning from the top down and then up in through the tree, you're getting sprouting, that's often an indication that you may start to get some decline. And the drought last year, this year's weather may be part of that. But then I also would ask myself, has there been any kind of root damage, any kind of site changes, or anything in the last even 5 to 10 years on that site that may have compacted the soil, caused root damage, changed the water flow in the area, anything that may have disturbed those trees? Because if anything happened there, again, those trees can live off reserves for a couple years, but then if they don't build that back up, they can start to decline from the top down. So if I'm seeing that kind of top die back from the top down, I'm concerned that maybe something happened to the root system or it is starting to decline a little bit.
All right, Karen, thanks for your call. Next up, Vajpi is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question. On each side of my yard, there is a part which just doesn't, the weeds don't give up. I have got it 2-3 times tilled, heavily mulch it, and it just doesn't. Every year, weeds come out, and the rest of the yard is not touched or impacted by them at all.
Okay, so you have two areas in your yard where you simply cannot get grass to grow. Is that correct?
Yeah, only weeds grow, and I even put oversaturated with wild flower seeds. I thought, well, they might grow. No, they didn't, but only weeds grow.
Okay. So you'd like to establish grass or some flowers, or which plants would you prefer?
I don't care about the grass. I wouldn't mind any kind of decent wildflowers or tall grass or whatever.
Okay. What you might want to do is actually go to a garden center and buy some plants. You can buy some native wildflowers at garden centers, like butterfly weed and purple coneflower. And I would actually buy some plants, if that's what you want to establish, rather than try growing them from seed.
Okay.
And I would just go ahead and work up the soil early next spring. Go ahead and buy your plants. Plant them. Keep them well watered. And if they don't survive, that would suggest there's something in the soil, some contaminant possibly, that's killing them. But my guess is if you put in plants, they'll probably do much better than seed.
All right. Well, good luck with that. I hope you have a prettier yard next year. And we'll squeeze in one more question. This is John from Waterloo. Hi, John.
Hi. I got a question about about an inch and a quarter tree that honey locust I planted last year, and I noticed this later this summer when I was looking at it. It has a lot of split in the bark. It's thin bark. It's not that coarse bark in it yet. And there's maybe some white kind of foam or fungus or something around it, and it's dripping, sap. It's probably a section about 3 feet, but maybe it's working its way up the tree. I don't know.
That doesn't sound real good, John. There could be some stress if there was some damage, and even with the heat, I'm seeing on some trees where it was really hot last year and parts of this year where they'll start to vertically crack. If you're not seeing new tissue grow around that, it could be a significant enough wound that tree may have some issues. You have some pretty good extension offices up in your area. I would probably take some pictures of that again and have them look at that. But a tree that young with that much cracking and that much damage, that could be a long-term problem.
The leaves seem to be hardy enough. I mean, what leaves there are seem to be green. They're not turning yellow or anything. But
I would look to see if there's new callus tissue behind that foam and behind that area. If there's not, I would make sure you keep water it this fall and through next spring and then watch it. But if that wound doesn't open extensively, you might be okay, but you might start to see more cracking too.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And I want to, before we say goodbye, I want to mention we were talking about fall color earlier, and we got an email from the Iowa Arboretum in Madrid. They have the Branches Tree Series class on fall color coming up on Saturday, October 12th from 9 to 11 a.m. So an opportunity to learn more about fall color. And, of course, we have that link on our website to the DNR so you can find out where the peak is right now. And Mark says always call ahead, right?
Call your friends.
All right. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And, of course, we'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And with me in the studio now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, coming up today at noon. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Charity. Coming up at noon, our News Buzz edition. We like to do this on Fridays to flit around to various news stories this week that we didn't get to and talk about them. Ken Sorensen, state senator, resigning after accusations that he inappropriately received pay from at least one presidential campaign in the 2012 caucuses. We'll talk about that with Chris Larimer of University of Northern Iowa. Several stories. Also, the story behind the state's first globally important bird area. We'll hear about cerulean warblers. I love saying that.
All right. You'll get to say it a bunch more today at noon. Ben Kiefer, thanks a lot. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.